banter, banter, banter. All right.
I thought we were having the built-in sound effect.
I was going to this week. I did not get any time to take care of that. But that is what bantering is all about. But you know what I did do this week, guys?
Nothing.
I got us. No, I actually got some really cool things done for the podcast. I got us on TuneIn. Nice. Got us on Stitcher. And I got us into Google Play.
Sweet. One of those.
We're on all three of those platforms now.
Yay!
Sweet.
So when do the millions of fans and adoration come? kidding.
Soon? I hope.
TM.
Yeah, it's like, more money. So, because I'll be honest, the cheap ramen's getting kind of boring. I'd like to get the ones that are already in their own cup.
That's it.
Cup of soup.
Yeah. God, I miss those. But
what? With the ramen cup of soups?
Yeah. I don't ever eat those.
I usually keep three or four, you know, because I still have, in case we lose like electricity or some shit,
yeah,
you know, and I still have my camp stove and I always keep one of the little dig things of propane. So, and since it doesn't generate dishes, I don't have to worry about. So I just like, you know, I keep a couple of
these. Girl.
Well, I live on the Eastern Seaboard, and we just, there was a hurricane recently.
Yeah.
Didn't get as far north as, you know, my neck of the woods, but I've had hurricanes get through, and I've had it where I was at, well, without power for a couple of days.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, it's like you get a huge, I got like the Sub-Zero cooler, like the huge monster cooler of like abject doom. And pretty much is like the day before I go out and I buy a block of dry ice, throw what the hell I can in there. So if, you know, we lose lights or, you know, at least I have a little extra time.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yep. So, you know.
That's why I've got one of those lift top chest freezers.
Mm. Oh, nice.
Yeah. Well, see, I used to live in Illinois and I lived 15 miles from the nearest grocery store, which doesn't sound like much until you're in the middle of a snowstorm where you literally can't get anywhere because none of the streets have been plowed or will be plowed for maybe as much as 2 days.
Oh, yeah. I found out, though, that here's the thing is, like, everyone goes by is bread and milk. Well, to heck with that. Here's what you want to go and get. You want to get cereal. Not bread. You want to do cereal. You know, because you're hungry, you can just grab a handful of it. You know, if it's you're in because of the snow, you know, you just take the milk, you know, and you don't have to worry about that going bad. You know, bread and peanut butter is always a good one, but, I mean, cereal is pretty much the go-to. Oh, God, it's like it's the drunken hangover snack. It's the, you know, midnight, it's the, you know, it's 11 o'clock, I'm studying, snack, you know, it's everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and, you know, over time, it's just like sandwiches are kind of, I don't know, they make you a little bit more depressed in a snowstorm versus, you know, breakfast cereal. I don't know why.
I don't know.
I have done both.
We had, because our back porch used to be, it was covered, and we had a grill. We'd grill in the middle of winter.
You lucky person, because I can't, middle of winter, yeah. I can't go outside, at least, well, temperature-wise, you know.
Well, I mean, we're talking about grilling in the single digits or below.
Yes. You know what happens to me when it drops below 70 degrees?
Well, yes, I know. You are, in fact, a freak, and that's why. But
now we have it on record. You've called me a freak, and I don't know if I should thank you for the promotion or sue you for defamation or both.
It's not defamation if it's the truth, hon.
Yeah.
Which are in good company because we're all freaks like that.
We're all weirdos.
I don't know. I'm just sitting here wondering what you guys are talking about. What's the snow thing? I'm from the south. We don't snow?
Yeah. The storm we had at the beginning of this year. Holy shit. Oh my god. I had to jump in. The snow was above my waist. So I had to jump in, dig myself out, you know, and, you know, kind of like, I couldn't move.
Yeah.
Oh my, it was, God, it was embarrassing.
Yeah, we didn't get snowstorms here this year. I didn't even get any snow. But that's
neither did Tampa. There.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, Eastern Seaboard here. I mean, you heard stories all over the place. You know,
yeah.
Oh God, it's like, not this year, but I think it was last year, maybe the year before. The roof to one of the things on the Smithsonian collapsed due to the weight.
Yeah, it was rough.
Mm.
But speaking of, you know what? You said Smithsonian, and speaking of that, that gets me to thinking about libraries, which, guess what this show's about?
Finding ancient libraries.
Yes, ancient libraries, because I would love to be around one. No, actually, it's your gaming library.
That felt forced, my friend, but we'll take it.
Hey, I am allowed to force it.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are. You big, lovable goof.
Yep.
I'm going to leave that one alone.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to even say anything about that. So I got to thinking about this, and I decided that we needed to do a show on what games we feel should be in a GM's library when they start to get into running games. Because it's all well and good to have, like, one of those quick starts.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, the out-of-the-box, you know, plug and play.
Yeah, you can just like, plug and play it with whoever, which those are great. They're awesome, especially if you just want to kind of get your feet wet and see what it's like. Once you've kind of run the course of those, it's time to start looking at what your library should start to become, because most gamers, especially GMs, end up with a library of game books.
One might say a plethora.
A plethora, yes. I consider mine a library because I have so freaking...
Mine's an archive.
But
I guess mine's a digital node?
Yes, yours is a digital node. Mine is both a digital node and also a library. I am like the library of the future and the past combined.
Yeah, yeah. Library of Alexandria, you ain't. But you're getting there. You're getting there. You're getting there.
I would have more if I had not sold stuff over the years, but...
Adulting sucks sometimes, right?
Yep.
Moving. Moving sucks.
Adulting. That's what it falls under. Adulting, which also includes cleaning, organizing, you know.
Yeah.
Purging.
So, but that's where digital is great, because if you have digital copies, you never have to lose those, because you can stick those on a computer, you can put those on the cloud, and you never lose them. But what kind of a game system should be in every GM's library?
The fundamentals, the basics, the ones that should not necessarily be the system you start with, but something you should play with at least a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, not just, you know, the gamer books. There's also a couple of, I'd say, regular books that, you know, at least every GM, even if you can't read the whole thing, get a synopsis, get it, you know, help. Clip notes are even fine, you know, because it will help. It sounds goofy, but,
mm-hmm.
You know.
So, I personally, and I feel like a lot of people would agree with me out there, is to have at least some version of D&D.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether your flavor is, you know, classic for a second edition, you know, 3.5 or Pathfinder as an offshoot for it.
D20. If you hate fantasy. And I know some people do. Mm-hmm. And
sure.
Hey, I like that they made a non-elf
right.
form of it, just so it offers another way into it. And it's simple.
Mm-hmm.
It really is simple. You have different types of dice, but the way it works is high numbers are always good. Low numbers are usually bad.
Well, mm-hmm. until you start getting into other game systems, and then things
standard D20, for your standard, like, you know.
D&D, yeah.
Yeah, for 3.5 and up, you know, as much as I love Thaco, you say that to certain people now, and they kind of, you know, like when a dog hears a too high-pitched noise, and their head cocks a bit, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so about D&D is that, while 4th edition may have gone way too far in that direction, I think D&D in general, especially the way it's built nowadays, it kind of lends itself to people coming off from being video game players to moving to tabletop, which a lot of new players are probably going to be, and as well as a lot of new GMs. Because it doesn't do the really hard and gritty, you get hit, so now you take lower numbers, you know, or it's a streamlined, this is the health you have. This is what you do to resist damage. Go.
Yeah. Yeah. But now, I agree. I totally agree. There needs to be some version of that, because that is the roots of the entire hobby, is D&D.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have at least some passing knowledge, then you're kind of doing yourself a disservice, kind of,
and to
but not completely. I mean, I understand that there are some people that just don't get it. They don't want to get it, and that's cool. But you should at least read something about it.
To quote a previous role playing podcast, curse those dirty hippie indie gamers.
Yes.
The thing is, like, and you can get copies off of, like, DriveThruRPG, so the distributor and creator still get some cash from it. But a copy, you know, just the base book, you know, just so you can, like, see what it's all about, and, you know, it gives you a intro language. For, you know, if you got more experienced players and you're a new GM, it's a lot of people. I hate to say it, it wasn't for me, but for most people, D&D is the gateway.
Yeah.
And to build on what you said earlier, Jules.
But I'm a weirdo.
And to build on what you said earlier, Jules, D&D is also the RPG system that probably has the most fiction written specifically about its various worlds. I mean, a lot of other RPG systems have fiction out there, but as a mass, D&D and all of its editions, they've got books.
Yeah,
and there are some, like, bloody amazing, holy cow, authors that, you know, specifically not that write for, like, Forgotten Realms and.
Oh, see, I was gonna go further back with the original Choose Your Own Adventures.
Oh, that's God, I just picked up a ton of books from my mom, you know, from when I grew up, and there's about six in there.
Yeah.
It's weird. I can't read them anymore.
Oh, God, they were horrible, but they were a gateway. They taught you, you know, decision-making and all of those important things and helping you learn how to read. They were actually useful in a lot of different ways.
But also kind of gave you the story does not have to be linear. And it allowed everyone is just like, do you go left or right? You know, like in Doctor Who, it's like way back, you know, it's like Donna Noble's like, what would happen if she turned right versus turning left? So it's just one of those things. It's just like, wow, and how everything big time changed.
So going from D&D, where do we go for where else from there for beginners?
Well, it depends. If you think about it, a lot of people, it's like, you know, you got D&D, you got your gateway. You can do a couple of things. One is going for a very, very easy and malleable system, or you go to a genre that you absolutely adore. So you can either, you know, find some of the more indie-ish games, you know, or like say if you are a huge, and I'm talking gigantic fan of Girl Genius by the Folios. You go to GURPS because they have Illuminati University, IOU. What's the O stand for? You're not clear to know that. And GURPS it's crazy complex, but they have some really weird stuff. And they're the only ones that have it.
Well, GURPS is an interesting choice, I would say, because it can be very basic.
I wouldn't recommend it.
Right. Well, I'm saying it could be a place for beginners. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those systems that there's so much stuff you can add onto it that it can bleed over to the advanced Dungeon Master, the expert, you know, who's been doing this for years and still finding new BS that system can throw at you.
Yeah,
oh, sure.
GURPS allows for a lot of, you know, growth, and it's very, very easy expandable. It's the Grow With You RPG. But if you're a big fan of, you know, if you love the adventures of Briscoe County Jr. and you love the Wild West and all that kind of stuff, go to Deadlands. If you like, God, I can't believe the show, the movie Underworld, and I can't believe I'm referencing this. You know, you have World of Darkness, Vampire the Masquerade, you have Werewolf the Apocalypse, you have that kind of stuff. So the systems, once you got D&D under your belt, you kind of have a feeling for, you know, okay, oh, these are stats. Okay, this is how they're doing stats. Deadlands Classic, on the other hand, though, they do stats very differently. You get your stats by drawing cards. In D&D, you roll dice. In Vampire, it's experience points. So
it's point buy.
Yeah.
But honestly, what you kind of need to have is, so after D&D, you kind of need to have something that is malleable. There's bunches of different systems. I know we've talked about like the Tri-Stat system before, which is the generic version of Big Eye, Small Mouth.
Animation at your role-playing table.
Yeah. It's fun, but it's weird.
It can be.
And here's the thing, your story and what you want to tell, the one thing, and I get this with video games too, it's the mechanics is metaphor kind of a thing. Certain games kind of actually lend to it, you know? You're just like, it helps add dramatic tension, but if you've got like a game, like a rule set, and it clashes, you know, what you're doing, it's like, that's, you know, something. So you also have to take that into account is the, you know, I'm trying to, if you're trying to run like a goofball, like in Big Eye, Small Mouth, you know, in that kind of a world, but you're using a game that uses Shadowrun mechanics, that ain't going to be fun. They clash.
Yeah.
And that's something you need to start playing out. And as you get more games under your belt,
that's more of an experience thing. But like, these are games that I feel like a lot of people should have, because like the Tri-Stat, you can buy the book if you can ever find it. You can get the PDF, and I think the PDF is free.
No, I still have. I do have Big Eye, Small Mouth, and I have my Demon City Shinjuku RPG based on that.
Which is pretty much just a synopsis of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, all of their stuff like that was originally just a synopsis of it.
Mm-hmm.
If they were using a specific anime.
Yeah, that was the one thing.
They just gave you a general overview of the of how the world,
yeah, there's,
each of those worked.
Yeah, there's some, you know, some like, oh god, the was it? Oh god, the D6 Star Wars. Don't know if you guys remember that one.
Yep, used to play
with,
it
with the super happy fun die.
Yep.
Oh boy.
Nope.
You know. And those are good.
It was technically, I think it was called a force die.
It is the force die, but it's the super happy fun die.
Because yeah, it's either crazy powerful or crazy unlucky.
Yeah. But the one thing I did like about that is if at least the rules and mechanics, you know, maybe not the world, but the rules and mechanics, running something like that, the GM actually kind of had to kind of think on their toes a little bit more. You get the same thing in Shadowrun when you glitch or critical glitch. You know, okay, make the test. Is it going to go? Okay, you blew everything up and everything's super duper awesome. Ooh, how do I handle that? And it forces to think on the feet and come up with a creative thing. You know, but it added also, you know, the GM has a bunch of different ways if, you know, things, you know, give thumbs down to mess with you. Which I actually kind of like, but it allowed a little bit more GM, I want to say meddling, but it's not really meddling. I don't know the right word for that.
So is that a system you can still get nowadays?
Pardon?
Is that still a system you can get pick up nowadays?
No, it was West End Games.
All right.
They folded.
Is there a modern comparable we could pick up?
I was able to pick it up at...
You can pick it up at, like, used bookstores sometimes, which is something I was going to suggest, is, like, with some of this stuff, books that we're talking about, things that are out of print, go to your like, local used bookstore. Somebody will get rid of stuff at some point, and you can always get it for way less than what it actually costs.
And sometimes check out... like drive-through RPG or something like that, and they'll have and it might no longer be in print, but the current license holder is re-releasing it as a PDF just so they can get, you know, get a little couple extra shekels. Not a bad idea.
Yeah. And that's the thing. And then I think, like, for a third system, because you need to have, like I said, you need to have D&D or a D&D derivative. You need to have something that's
like
kind
Source
of
and
generic.
Sorcery too. Yeah.
That you can play with. And then you need to have something else that's more
if like, it's you
refined,
you know?
Of what you like.
You know,
whether it's something horror, whether it's something science fiction, whether it's a completely different fantasy game.
Yeah. Call of Cthulhu. You know, Cthulhu Fathagen, you know, yay. Deadlands. I'll be honest, I love Deadlands.
Yeah, you always bring it up.
Yeah, Shadowrun's my jam. Shadowrun is my main jam, but Deadlands, let's just put it this way. It's really cool when everyone and their brother is scared of tumbleweeds because of what your GM did. It's brilliant. You know, it's like, you know, there's Star Wars, there's Star Trek, there's Serenity, there's GURPS, which generic universal role playing system, which is everything. And you get some of the weirder ones. Like, personally, I love Anomine.
Yeah.
Oh, that's real. Steve Jackson Games, really, they have some of the more weirder stuff, but it's brilliant.
Okay, so I'm going to throw this one out there. It is kind of universal because technically the systems are all the same. And people will hate me for saying it, but Palladium's systems are horrible game systems as far as I'm concerned.
You mean mechanics-wise or universe-wise?
Yes.
Okay.
Dang.
I don't like Palladium stuff. There is only one Palladium game that was ever done that was pretty freaking awesome. And that was the TMNT and Other Strangeness RPG.
Teenage Mutant What? No.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Okay.
They did a version of it, the original version. It was amazing. And it played well because they had the guys who wrote it involved in the process.
Ooh.
So it plays like a Palladium game-ish. Now, I have found a PDF version of it somewhere. I don't remember where. But I have that version of it. And I really want to run it at some point. Because it's you get to play the Turtles. I mean, or, you know, mutants like the Turtles. And it's one of those things. It's just totally cool.
And the thing is, like, and I'll be honest, there's a game out there that has a no dice mechanic called Dread.
There's another one.
Dread is you use a Jenga tower.
Oh yeah. Amber doesn't even have to have anything. It's GM caveat.
Cool.
It's all based on like I have a whatever in this. You have less than that. I win. Now, how do I win? But you have to have read, like, the Amber novels and all of that stuff.
I'm not familiar with it, unfortunately, but...
That's about what I am, because I knew somebody that used to run it and loved it.
Sweet.
Not my bag, but...
Yeah. You know, it's like Dread just because it's the first... And it's a horror-based RPG.
Yeah.
You know, where you... It's like, okay, are you able to are you able to rummage through your backpack and get out your e-tool because there's a zombie almost ready to do it and you pull out a Jenga piece. I'm like, you know, and I like it. I thought it was a really, it's a mechanics way actually, you know, game mechanics way of building tension because you're still role playing and you're watching that tower get more and more unstable and everyone's just like, and holding the breath.
Yeah.
And then you look at your friend when they start sneezing and like, I will freaking kill you.
Yeah. Whereas one of my favorite games that nobody knows about really is called Immortal.
Tell us about it.
You're a shapeshifter and you are immortal. You have been in existence since before the dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
And basically the history of this game goes back to pretty much the creation of the universe. And that's where it starts. And it moves forward from there, where there was a creature called the Sanguinary who came from the Crucible of Creation. And there was... something happened between it and these other two beings that had first come out of the Crucible. And the Sanguinary was shattered. He was crystalline. And those pieces of crystal have embedded themselves in things throughout the world. And it all takes place on Earth. It's a modern day high fantasy game. Because these reeds, all of your powers are actually songs. And it's how you pitch the reed to make certain noises. You can do certain powers. Like one of their powers is called, Lay, and it allows you to travel across ley lines. And what you're doing is you're pitching that reed, that crystalline reed, to mimic the sound of traveling through a ley line, and it pulls you into it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another one called Flux and Flow, where you literally can run on anything in the air. So those are just some of the really cool ones.
Yeah, but, you know, if you're looking on something, you know, you can grab on, like, Amazon, or at your local game store, or, you know, maybe if they still exist, because we have no idea when you'll listen to this. So if it's a year in the future and all the local bookstores are gone, you know, we're sorry.
Yeah.
It's true. But some of the big ones, it's, you know, I would definitely recommend, you know, picking up. Excuse me. Pardon me. I'm sorry. It's like there's, there's Star Wars, D20 Star Wars. You know, because I know a lot of people, they love the
Star
world.
Star Wars is not owned by Wizards anymore. They lost the license.
When?
A while ago. No,
I can still get it on Amazon.
Yeah, because you're buying it from somebody else.
No, it's sold by Amazon.
Right, because they bought copies in a warehouse somewhere. The actual license is not held by Wizards anymore. That's why somebody else is doing like X-Wing Fighter and stuff.
It's Fantasy Flight Games, I think, still has it too.
They are the ones who have the license right now.
Yeah.
But Wizards is the one that did the role-playing game. The X-Wing is Fantasy Flight, and it's a tabletop-like miniatures game.
I know there is a development on it, so.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you like, it depends really on, actually, you know what? World of Darkness, believe it or not, I think also might not, it's a D10 system, but I'll be honest, I have no idea what the heck is going on with White Wolf. Everything's changing. They ended the Apocalypse line, and then they did New World of Darkness, which I thought was a little bit better for modularity. It had like the World of Darkness source book, and that's what you, and everything built off of that template. So you would have your World of Darkness, and then you could put Vampire or Mage or Wraith or whatever, Promethean. And now they're doing like the anniversary sets of
Apocalypse.
It's like,
the guy who has the rights to, because White Wolf is gone.
Yeah, they sold it to the people that did EVE Online. They sold the license to it.
Right. And they have said that they are not going to produce any more RPG stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody buys them. That's what they said. They are basically holding on to it so that they can produce a video game.
They were. They actually announced, I think, 3 years ago that they were completely stopping all work on the World of Darkness RPG.
Well, yes. And the guy who has the rights to the RPG stuff is doing everything through Kickstarter now.
Yep.
And you can still Onyx Path.
Yep. You are right. You can actually pick up the ones that are actually out there. You can buy them on Drive-Thru RPG.
Yeah.
Legend of the Five Rings, if you're really big into like the Sengoku Jidai era of Japan, not area, I can't speak. not my bag, probably the furthest from my bag. But you know, for some people that love it, you know, and love that time in history, are really big into that. You know, it's fantasy. Ish of Sengoku Jidai, you know, where Shugenja huck fireballs and what have you, but it's, you know, it's interesting. Not my bag.
Yeah.
But certain people, I would say, I'll read the books. I'll read the novels tied to it. I won't play it.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, I just recently went to a game store here in town, and the collection of what they have is actually kind of telling. Because I have found that I can find BattleTech.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I can find Pathfinder. I can find 3.5, or not 3.5, 5th edition.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I can find some Shadowrun.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one that I'm finding tons of right now is Savage Worlds.
I am finding a lot of those. That really propped up in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
More and more.
Yep. But the thing is, right now, there's also kind of a backlash against it. Because, Savage Worlds, they took some IP that they were able to get, and some of the old hardcore fans are not liking it. You know?
Well, I mean,
it's done by Pinnacle Entertainment, and the best way to put it is they're pulp, not like in negative, but the thing is, they got, it's pretty much, it's what, you know, Deadlands is currently. That's Savage Worlds, it's like, you have Deadlands, I think Necropolis, I think, is one of them.
Oh, they've got tons of stuff.
Mm-hmm. But the thing is, like, they kind of, simply put, universalized. You know, this is where you started getting the Hell on Earth stuff. And they kind of universalized the mechanics across the board.
Well, that's the thing with Savage
Worlds. And that pissed off a lot of people that liked certain, certain games had their very own unique mechanics, and universalizing is they felt took away from it.
Well, sure. And they do. But for some of those games, like specifically Deadlands, anybody had seen Deadlands was when it was originally released. After, the second edition,
mm-hmm.
You didn't see it anymore.
It went to Hell on Earth. Yeah, they pretty much stopped doing Deadlands, and they did Deadlands Hell on Earth, which is the Manitou one.
But even that, all of when Deadlands ended, it's been 15 years since Deadlands has been done.
Yeah, because it was 2003, I think, is when Savage Worlds started.
Yeah, but they didn't have it then. Savage Worlds didn't have Deadlands right away. That was one of their later acquisitions. Because originally they only had three books after the main book. They had a fantasy book, a superhero book, and horror. Those were the three books for Deadlands
Deadlands was owned by Deadlands, Pinnacle. Deadlands was Pinnacle.
Yeah, but just Savage Worlds, the core Savage Worlds. There were only four books originally for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of the reason why. And so it's gotten back to a point now where they're trying to do other things with it. And that's with any system where they have like a universal system. GURPS was the same way.
Mm-hmm.
You had people that were playing GURPS Vampire going, well, this isn't Vampire. It's like, well, no, it's GURPS.
Yeah.
You're playing a different game.
Mm-hmm. But the thing is, Vampire also still kind of existed.
Well, yes, but the same, that's what happened, though. That was during the heyday of gaming, when you had GURPS and you had Palladium, where they were just like, just throw as much content out there as we can. And now the smaller companies can't produce like that. They don't have the bandwidth to do it because it's expensive to do. And they want to put out the bar has been kind of raised in the last several years. And it gets, when the bar keeps getting higher and higher, you end up not being able to compete against a Paizo or, a Wizards of the Coast or
Catalyst.
I mean, the big guys in the room will always be able to outproduce you for quality and quantity.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully, I'm thinking with a lot of more books going on, a PDF for you. Hopefully that might, yeah.
Yeah.
Because, mm-hmm. Little Fears, It's very niche, but anyone and their brother could go on DriveThruRPG and buy the books.
Yeah.
That is
one of the great things about the present age is that you can find games on DriveThruRPG, or if you don't live anywhere near where there's a game store, mm-hmm. or you can go to the company's website.
Yep.
And buy them. If you don't buy the physical books, you can usually buy a PDF from the company. And that's something to really keep in mind, is that those are all options for you.
Yeah, you no longer have to hope that your local game store will have XYZ book.
Because a lot of times nowadays, nobody carries them.
Yeah.
Yep.
Hershey, Barnes & Nobles.
What? They don't even exist anymore, really.
I still have one.
There's one in my neck of the woods, too.
Yeah, there was one.
Just that the RPG section went from 3 full shelves when it opened about 10 years ago to last time I was there, it was half a shelf of RPG books and then half a shelf of, merely issues of comics.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember
a wall of manga.
Oh, gosh. The manga area is growing. Run!
Yeah, but that's how it's always been. Yeah, so basically what you should have is... Justin, what do you say everyone should have, every GM should have in their library?
I think a simple system like D&D, like we said. I think a story system like World of Darkness, or some of the other newer systems like that. And then something that's a little crunchy to kind of get you going towards, more complex systems. Shadowrun's a good place to start there. A couple things like that. I'm not really a big fan of GURPS that much, but from what I've played with, that's also kind of a good way to get to the crunch level of RPGs. And then I would also highly encourage people to try out some indie RPGs. Because a lot of them tend to be very simple. And some of them tend to be...
say a lot. And then there's some that are not.
And then there are some that are not. Because if we're talking about like what every expert role-playing gamer should have...
And I stare at you, Burning Wheel.
I stare at thee. You and your precious gold booklet you can't find a PDF for that's in really good copies. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, stay away from riffs.
Yeah. Again, I think having that level of complexity, because a Game Master's library is not just a library of the games that they can pull out, but it's the library that when a gamer comes over, or a potential gamer comes over, that they can pull off the shelf and just flick through. So I highly recommend you have one or two systems that has really, really pretty pictures of really awesome characters that can intrigue your curious mind.
Yes. Oh, do you know what a great game for that is? I believe the name of it was Alpha Omega.
Sounds neat.
It's almost like a coffee table book.
That works. That's perfect. Exactly what I think you should have.
And I think that's the name of it, is Alpha Omega.
And the coffee table is, RPG.
It's... Oh, God, no. It's, like, super complex, but the artwork in it is amazing. It's not something that you would ever play, but it looks so pretty.
That kind of goes against the caveat of...
I know.
Drawing
I know,
people in.
But, oh, my God, that one is one that's just... It's a beautiful book. But, yeah, it's... If I remember correctly, it's, like, one of those... It's. The artwork was where they spent 90% of their budget. So, take that for what it is.
Maybe not that many pictures.
Like I said, it's an art book. It's a coffee table book.
Right, right.
But,
yeah.
So those are my picks.
All right. Jules, what would you say needs to go in somebody's library?
It's like...
Keep it under 5.
Dude, come on. Now, it's... you need... First, your intro type, and Justin's right. You need the you know, D&D, D20, stuff like that. The other one you have is should be in a setting or a universe that you really, really, really like, you know, and, you know, they're all over the place. You can actually look them up. You know, something that really calls to you that you could pretty much pull a game out of your ass, you know. So if everyone wants to play something and you're told to play, okay, pull it out.
That's a different type of role-playing game.
Didn't mean it like that. You know what I meant. You know, but it's the, you know, pretty much I could run a little Fierce game like right now. You asked me to do it because I love the system so much. I could come up with something really, really quick. Mm-hmm. You know, I love that universe. Certain people can do that with Shadowrun. Certain people can do that with Anomine. Something
my
that,
go-to for that is Call of Cthulhu.
Mm-hmm. Some people, yeah, honest to goodness, like, you know, we're all bored. You want to roll something? Okay, and somebody just you can start almost right, just pull something straight up.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the one thing I recommend you always having a go-to, you know, is, you know, your basic, and then something that you love, you know, something that's tied, that, you know, because sometimes if you kind of hit burnout trying to run something else, this is your binky. This is your comfort food RPG. It could be as complex or as simple as you like, but it's something that, you know, it kind of running it recharges your batteries. So sure. That's the one thing. It's like, and for me, I've got three. It's Little Fears for me for running, Deadlands. I can run it, and I usually can do it unless somebody knows the rules better than me. Then I'm like, because they're evil, and it's awesome though, you know, because anything Bruce Campbell likes has to be awesome. And Anomine. Those are my go-to that I could run pretty much off the top of my head, just because I like them so much. You know, I love Shadowrun. I would need time to prep. So I'd actually have to take a little time and read and do a little extra stuff. As much as I love it, I can't run it off the top of my head. It's, you know.
It's complicated.
Mm-hmm. So how about you, Zendad?
All right. I'm going to say something here. And while I agree we need, like, something that's introductory. And actually, Pathfinder did the beginner box, which is a slimmed down version of their rules. And if you're trying to get new players, and it's not something that you would play a lot of normally, mm-hmm. This is a really easy way, because it comes with, like, each character is like a booklet, like a fold out, like, 3-page front and back sort of character. And it's got an introductory adventure. It's got a map. It's got many, like standees. It's got everything you need, right? All in one place. And it teaches you how to make a character using this kind of basic system.
Mm-hmm.
And all you're doing when you go from that to the big freaking gigantic book is like adding some more weird things that don't come up all the time. And that's pretty much, so it's something that you can just easily run. And it walks you through how to do all of those things as part of the learning process of how to play it. So I think something like that is actually really useful. I also feel like you should have, at the very least, something that is truly a generic system, like either a GURPS or a Tristat or a Savage Worlds, because those give you an immense level of flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
To do whatever within them. Because if you understand the basic, like, core workings, you can extrapolate it out to whatever you want to run. And then I really think that everybody should have something that really is like their drive. This is the thing that really just, it is their bailiwick. I have a friend who runs amazing games. Every game he has run has been phenomenal. But if you give him the New World of Darkness Changeling, The Lost,
mm-hmm.
it is the most horrifying game you will ever play.
Sounds fun.
Sweet.
That is what he does, is he runs an amazing Changeling game. Better than every other game he runs. And I played in one of his vampire games that lasted for 7 years.
That's quite a campaign.
It was punk chump change compared to the four stories that we told, or three stories that we told with Changeling. That's how much better he is at Changeling than he is at Vampire.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of where it's at. I mean, he was yep. amazing. So that's whatever your thing is, whatever drives you, whatever inspires you.
Red Dwarf RPG.
If that inspires you. And then I think that's going to pretty much wrap it up. So I guess we're moving on, folks. Moving on to some stat blocks. I'm going to do this because I'm a jerk. Jules, what you got?
I got nothing tonight. Unfortunately, I was working on something and it blew up. Not exactly blew up. Let's put it this way. My computer decided to restart. I was working in Notepad because it was easy and it was up. And it ate everything. So I am bitter. But I will get you more stuff next week. I am sorry.
All right.
Hold on. Then I'm going to introduce a new thing to the podcast. When somebody doesn't have a stat block, I'm going to introduce an immediate challenge.
Oh. Jules.
You love Little Fears? It's your favorite system? Or one of your favorite systems?
Mm.
Make up a important item to a character. What their focal character piece is. I forget what you call it in the game.
Called stuff.
Okay.
So you want me to come up with a piece of stuff?
Make up a piece of stuff. Something cool.
All right. Keep a spare change of panties there, boys. You might need to change them. But hell yeah. All right. I will. All right. Challenge accepted, sir. Okay. The gauntlet is thrown. I have picked it up. So what about you two?
Well, mine are, I did some Drabble stuff, which are 100 word stories. And the idea was these could be used as either jumping off points or who knows, maybe they drive some inspiration people's way. So I'm just going to read them off to you. There's three of them here. So they go pretty quick, though. Number one. Shots plowed into the concrete above Daniel's head. What had I gotten myself into, he thought, as he crawled behind cover. Pulling out the gun was a weird feeling for him, as he had never done this before. He squeezed off four rounds in rapid succession. Then he opened his eyes to see if he had hit anything. As expected, not a single hit. The tactically masked people peered out, then fired another volley. Then, as if he had done this 1,000 times, he rolled out from cover and fired off several shots that pinned them as he ran. Number two. The silence was not deafening. It was unnerving. The dark? Now that was creepy. You know that feeling you get when you're certain there's someone or something right next to you? Not that you can see or hear them. The unknown. That is the true killer. That thing that makes you imagine things are a million times more terrifying than the reality. If only it were that simple. Time seems to stretch in this place. Where is this place? Wait, is that a pinprick of light? Yes, it must be because it's getting larger. The fold of space-time unfurls. And number three. Leaping up, I catch the slightest breeze and grab hold, letting it drag me into the sky. There are a few like me that have powers. I don't like to think about it like that. I'm not a human anymore. I am something else. Yes, I feel like a human, but on another level. I cannot be human anymore, since I can do amazing things. Flight is just one of my talents. I can pick up a car with some minor effort. There are some that can teleport, and other things too. We are the next phase of mankind. Done.
Well done, huh. Sir. Nice. Well done.
Thank you. Thank you very much. All right, Justin, what you got?
Continuing allied trickery.
Of course.
It's my thing. Anyway,
you I know. Monster.
That's not this week. Anyway. Now, this week, we're covering The Outsider. When we look at the people that populate an RPG world, we often think of them as part of the cultural context our characters are a part of. Aspects of tradition, community standards, practices and policies that make society work. Such behavior is how we usually judge new people we meet, and if they are known to us, or if they are another. But the real world, especially for travelers, explorers, and adventurers, often brings groups of people together who don't share the same default states, and conflict, although unintentional often, occurs on a regular basis. The Outsider is one of these others, and the approach to the players may put them off at first, because understanding cultural boundaries and pushing past them isn't something a player may initially be willing to do. The NPC Outsider has a great potential within the game setting. They offer a chance to break the mental shortcuts players will use with NPCs. Whether it's the treatment of diplomatic customs, respect for religious or political iconography, or just normal manners, the chance to experience the world through another viewpoint is at the heart of role-playing games, and The Outsider reinforces that dialogue. Barriers such as language, upbringing, and class standing provide means for cultural impact on a game while presenting a game master the chance to expand the depth of the reality they've helped introduce to players. Outsiders exist in all RPG genres, as every world should feature a complex set of cultures and communities. Breathing life into these allies comes in a form of changing the norms players may be used to, and twisting them on their head. In fantasy, this may be the druid who has come to aid your party, but their creed is one of respecting the natural order of life, and so healing spells are not part of their preparations. In science fiction, aliens and artificial life forms may appear human, but possess different biologies or forms of interaction. In contemporary fiction, the choices are myriad as the number of cultures part of our real world. The key is not to treat them as stereotypes, but instead as fleshed-out individuals. Remember, though, cultural missteps are a two-way street. While an outsider may not fit in or understand the culture of the players, it is easy for the player to act incorrectly within the outsider's worldview. Offense, breach of social contract, or damage to honor can turn an outsider against a party, especially if the party has been failing to be considerate of both cultural touchstones.
Well done, sir.
Thou art thespian. Thou art totally kick-ass.
All right, we're just gonna chug right along here and tackle into lexicon. Ready for this one, folks?
Mm-hmm.
It is Mater.
M-A-T-E-R?
M-E-T-I-E-R.
Oh, okay.
The lovely little noun.
Sorry, I've got a couple rednecks in locally.
Not mater.
I honestly have to check, sir.
Which is like potato, but different.
Mm-hmm.
No. That didn't sound breakfast.
whatever. I'm a GM. I make up voices. The definition is a vocation or trade. Also, it's an area of activity in which one excels. So your forte. Examples, we don't really need one. I mean, the definition is pretty straightforward for this. The origins of it is French, from vulgar Latin, mysterium, which is an alteration of Latin's ministerium, which is work or ministry. And its first known use was 1792. So somewhere there's a book with that from 1792.
Nice.
Yeah. So
interesting use of a word.
Yeah. It's not something that I thought most people would use, so I thought it was
I would actually offer this to players or to game masters for how they could use this word. If you're making up a fantasy world, you could use this as an official title to a tradesman or something like that.
Yeah, that would be a great, great thing to use them for. All right, well, we have been running for pretty long time now, so I think we are going to hit our closing remarks. Oh, you went there, didn't you, Justin?
I changed it.
Oh, you bastard.
Of course you changed. What did you
do? All right, Justin, go. You got this one.
Well, 5 years ago, the game came out, and this is going to date the podcast, but in a couple of hours, Skyrim Special Edition comes out. It comes out on Friday. Doesn't it come out Thursday?
No, it comes out Friday. It comes out in 2 days. I've got it reserved right now.
Well, shoot. That's okay. That means more time for me to actually work on stuff than being sucked back into Skyrim. Anyway, if you haven't heard of it, it's basically a remaster of the game. It most importantly changes the system requirements from 32x to 64x, which means your game isn't limited to 4 gigs of RAM. So all those mods that you want to put on there for your PC usage, go nuts, because you're not capped on memory anymore. Use as many as you want. Go crazy. Except old mods won't work on the new version. You're going to have to wait for them to re-release.
There's something that is coming with that. For those of you who don't use your PC, it is coming out as well for the current platforms, which is PS4 and
Xbox One.
Wait, why would you play a Bethesda game without the mods?
Because you don't need them, because the games themselves are amazing without it.
And there's modding coming to the Xbox One.
And to the PlayStation.
They're still fighting over that.
They are fighting over that one, yeah.
They said yes, then they said no, then they said some, and all the specific. Xbox pretty much just said, yep, bring it. PlayStation's like...
Well, they've also had a lot of issues with security.
No shit.
Getting hacked, so...
That's true.
That's one of the reasons why they're being a lot more conspicuous with what they choose to let in. And I respect them for that.
It's less about... that the security, it's more about the platform and the architecture. Yeah. And just right now, just stay away from it. The drama and the flame wars, you'll lose your eyebrows. So to hell with it.
But they're coming. Mods are coming for the different platforms now. So
You could just PC master race and stick with the way it should be. He says it for grin.
It's how you want to play it. Play games how you like to play them.
That is our mantra.
So, all right. I actually got to use this on Friday or Saturday when I ran my game. Now, I've talked about Sirenscape before. And Sirenscape is a, it's a audio platform that allows you to use sound effects and music and everything all bundled very neatly together.
Ooh.
It's really cool. It's kind of like a soundboard with other things in it. And for like $10 a month, you get access to their fantasy, their science fiction, and they have what they call their board game. And you get access to all three of these and all of the content that they've released at that point. You have access to all. And then whenever you cancel your subscription, you have access to everything that you had up until you canceled. Like, they don't take it away from you if you cancel your subscription.
That's awesome.
Really nice. And it's fun. And the guy who did it is Australian. Mm-hmm. And I believe Australian, New Zealand, something like that. But he has a special one from Gen Con, I think last year, where they actually had people show up and they would like, you know, he needed like a whole bunch of like crazy like screams and everything else. So they had like people like just coming up and screaming into a microphone for him. And it was, it's all on there. And I just paid the, I had bought like, I needed a city. So I bought like the city one and other in a tavern. I bought at the tavern because they're like $3 or $4. Every once in a while, they'll give away free ones. And those are awesome to have too. As long as you do it like in a certain time frame and you use this code, you can get access to this free one. And it's pretty cool. I got this one because I'm getting ready to run a Changeling, the Lost game. And I wanted to have some things for like a coffee shop or a bar. And they have those too. And they have fantasy things, which I can use in a Changeling game. So I'm nice. Like, this is the best of both worlds. So I'll have them all. And for the $10 a month, it was just, it was too good of a deal to pass up. And I finally bit the bullet and I'm like, I'm going to buy it. And so I got it. It's phenomenal. It's taking forever to download everything though, because you actually download all of them and use them on whatever device you're using. So if you've got them on your, and you can use it on your phone, your computer, a tablet, it's cross-platform. It runs on iPads, Android devices, everything. It's a great, great little thing to have. My advice, check it out.
Oh, heck yeah.
Love it.
Cool.
All right, Jules, what you got?
Well, we were talking about, you know, like tonight is, you know, what games do you run and this and that. And, you know, a lot of it you need to craft a good story. So I recommend Joseph Conrad's Heart of Darkness and Joseph Campbell's Hero of a Thousand Faces. They're older books, much, much older. Joseph Conrad's Heart of Darkness, that's actually was used as kind of like a basis for Spec Ops The Line. Freaking awesome video game. Go play it. But it's really good with crafting this. What's the best way to put it? It's just, I'm trying to find the right words for it. But pretty much it's the way the descent into depravity, you know, of and kind of the psychology. But you're not like, oh, it's not like Freud and analytics. You're actually in it with them. So I highly recommend that one. And the Hero of a Thousand Faces, that has been adapted into almost everything. George Lucas used it heavily when he did Star Wars, you know. And
it's philosophy.
But it helps you, you know, it helps. It's really, really good also if you're, you know, running with a group and you can adapt, you know, the Hero of a Thousand Faces in, you know, for your first kind of story, you know, You know, the just starting out, the denial of the, no, I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to fight. And it's like, oh, horrible things happen. Okay, we all have to fight. So it gives kind of like a nice framework, at least, you know, generically, to have your group go. You know, it gives you a framework on, okay, if, all right, so how do I hook them back, you know? So it makes you think about, you know, the story and the rough framework of it and, you know, okay, how do you generically make them do it? And it can be adapted to almost anything.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, I'm going extremely old school here, but, you know, it's something eventually, you know, you can get it. If you're not in the mood to read it, pick it up on. I actually have it on Audible. Kenneth Branagh narrates Heart of Darkness. It's Kenneth fucking Branagh, who is fucking awesome. And he's reading Heart of Darkness, so you're like, oh, yes, yes, that's ear porn right there. he's awesome. So, you know, it just to help you craft, you know, characters, NPCs for your world, and how to kind of guide your characters through, you know, and the hero of a thousand faces is the hero's journey, and it's kind of comforting to go into it. So I highly recommend it.
Yeah.
You know, we all want to, you know, especially in like D&D or something like that, you know, where you want the good guys to win or something like that.
You always hear the, you know, it's the hero's journey. It's the hero's journey. Everybody talks about it, but nobody knows. Nobody says where it's from.
Mm-hmm. And so. Yeah. And there's, you know, they start off, they deny the quest, you know, that's where it comes from. So if you want the original source, that's the original source. So
yeah. In modern day. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't want to say it's like it's not the original hero, but it's where you get where that kind of goes into philosophy, and it goes really deep. So it really helps you put it for a lot of stuff. Sorry, I am losing my ability to speak right now. Like,
it's okay. It's late. Yeah,
it's storming too.
Ah. All right, so it's folks.
Like, what is that flashing?
Well, on that note, I think we're going to call it a show.
Yay. So
develop your game libraries, folks.
Mm-hmm. Just with gamer books, but, you know, pick up some books on philosophy and design.
We might actually have to do a show on some of those, the non-gaming GM books.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah.
Future episode.
That might be the next one, actually, because that's a really good topic.
Gaming Library Part 2, the appendix.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we might actually do that.
I have a bunch of those books. They actually outnumber my regular gaming books. I have a bunch.
So, let's put a pin in this one, and we will see you guys next week.
Have a good one, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye. You can contact us or the show using Twitter, Facebook, or regular old email. Twitter accounts are, mine is at Zendead.
I'm at Jules Podcaster.
And you can find me at Null Operations.
And the show's Twitter account is at SeizeTheGM. You can email me at Zendead@SeizeTheGM.com.
And me at Jules@SeizeTheGM.com.
And me at nulloperations@seizethegm.com.
We're also on Facebook. Find us at http://www.facebook.com/seizethegm. So thanks for joining us for this episode of Seize the GM. Feel free to leave a comment about this episode on our webpage, www.seizethegm.com. Let the dice fall where they may, and we'll see you again next week.
Seize the GM is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 4.0 International License. All copyrighted material references herein are held by the respective owners. No infringement intended, and no claim of ownership is implied.
Music for this show is from Magnatune.com. Links to the artists will be in the show notes. Once again, we will see you next week.